Home at Seven by R.C. Sheriff, the part of David Preston is played by Patrick Barr, Janet, his wife, by Isabel Dean, and Dr. Sparling by James Thomason. The scene is set in the Preston's house in the London suburbs. The year is 1950. Home at Seven.
Hello, Janet, my dear. Have you got a cup of tea?
Oh, David, my darling, my darling.
Janet, what on earth's the matter? What happened? Janet, what is it? Aren't you well? But for heaven's sake, please, what is it?
David, it's been terrible. I thought I'd go mad. What happened to you? Where have you been?
Where have I been? To the office, of course. Where do you think I've been?
But last night. And all today.
What on earth are you talking about? I've never seen you like this before, Janet. If you didn't feel well, why didn't you ring me at the bank? You only had the phone. I'd have come home at once.
I've been in torment all day and all last night. I thought I was going mad.
All last night? What do you mean, all last night?
When you didn't come home.
Janet, dear, look at the clock up there. It's just gone seven. I'm always home at seven, every night. Look, there's nothing for you to worry about. It's just been an ordinary day, dear, just like any other Monday.
But today's Tuesday.
Monday, darling.
It's Tuesday, David.
You're tired, Janet. You've got confused. I do know what day of the week it is.
It's Tuesday.
Yesterday was Sunday. Don't you remember? It rained a little in the morning. It cleared up, and in the afternoon we worked in the garden. After supper we listened to the radio. Remember? Look, I'll just go and make you a cup of tea, dear. You probably had an afternoon nap and dreamt that I didn't come home. But I did. Everything's all right.
David.
Yes?
Just a moment.
Well?
The evening paper you just brought in. Look. Tuesday.
Tuesday? But it's not Tuesday.
Darling, we've always understood one another. If you suddenly felt you wanted to go away and be alone for a while, well, that's perfectly all right. I should have understood. But why couldn't you have telephoned and told me you weren't coming home?
Janet, something's happened. I don't understand. You must give me time to think, because... Well, I'm sure there's really quite a simple explanation that'll come in a minute. Anybody at the bank could tell you I've been there all day.
You've not been at the bank all day. I rang the manager. I had tea ready on this table here at 7 o'clock last night, like I always do. When you didn't come in, I thought you'd missed your train at Cannon Street, or perhaps the train was late for some reason. Then 8 o'clock came, and I was terribly worried, because you've always telephoned me if you're going to be late. Then at 9 o'clock, I couldn't bear it any longer. I rang up the police.
You rang up the police?
What did you expect me to do? Did you expect me to lock up the house and go to bed as if nothing had happened? The sergeant on duty said he'd inquire at the hospitals and let me know if anyone had been brought in. I sat up in this chair all night, waiting and listening. When the bank was open, I rang up the manager.
What?
He said you hadn't come in the morning, but you left last night as usual at 5 o'clock. You said you always leave at six. You told me you always leave at six.
That's right, I always do, at six.
I asked him again because it surprised me. He repeated it. He said you always leave at five.
He must have made a mistake, or you misunderstood him. He always leaves at five. He was speaking of himself when he said that.
At noon, he rang again and said you still hadn't come in. Since then, I've just sat here for hours and hours, and I thought I was going mad. And then you walk in as if nothing had happened and say I must have dreamt it all.
I can only tell you one thing, Janet. Unless I've taken leave of my senses, I've been at the bank all day and done the usual work I always do on Monday.
Oh, really?
Look at my clothes. Do I look as if I'd wandered about all night? Where could I have washed and shaved? Do I look any different from what I look when I come in every evening from the office? This Tuesday paper, I don't understand. There must be some explanation, some quite simple explanation. Answer it, William.
Hello? Yes, yes, it's Mrs. Preston speaking. Yes, he's just come in. No, he's quite all right. I don't know. Yes, I'll tell him. It's the manager. He says you've not been at the bank all day. He'd like to speak to you.
Good evening, Mr. Cooper. Yes, I'm quite all right. I don't know. I'd like to talk to you. Well, I really can't tell you anything now. I'll be at the bank early at 9:15 and come and see you in your office. Yes. Yes, good night.
I'll get you a cup of tea.
Yes, please. Thank you, Dennis.
Good evening, Mrs. Preston.
Oh, Dr. Sparling, I'm so glad you've come. Do come in.
Thank you.
My husband's upstairs lying down. He didn't want me to call you, but I think you ought to see him. Come in here, will you?
Thank you. You, definitely think he's ill?
I don't know. I know nothing more than what I told you on the telephone. He came in looking quite well and cheerful. He looked perfectly all right until I told him what had happened.
And then?
Then, well, he refused to believe it until I showed him the paper and the bank manager rang up.
He believed it then?
Naturally, he had to.
Oh, well, he couldn't possibly have thought that he could walk in like that and make him believe that nothing had happened. Unless he honestly believed that nothing had happened himself.
I know, that's what I don't understand. I believe he was absolutely genuine when he seemed surprised, and yet I had a feeling he was concealing something.
Oh?
Well, it's a small thing, but he told me he left his office at 6:00 last night. That he always leaves at 6:00. But the manager told me on the telephone that he leaves at 5:00. Regularly. Every night.
Well, that hardly explains him being away for 24 hours.
No, but it...
Did you ask him about it? About the time of his leaving?
Yes. He said it was a mistake. Well, he was so certain that I had to believe him.
Yes, of course.
You don't know us very well, Doctor, but we're absolutely happy together.
Yeah, I'm sure of that.
And that made it rather hard for me to say what I did to him. But I did try to make him realize that I would understand perfectly if he wanted to go off by himself for a while.
And what did he say?
He said quite definitely that there was nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Then I think you should accept that.
Yes, I do. Because I'm certain he always has told me the truth in all the years we've been together.
Well, now, if you'll let him know that I'm here.
Yes, I'll go and tell him. David, Dr. Sparling's here.
Right, I'll come down.
Well, I'll leave you together.
Yes, all right. Good evening.
Good evening, Doctor.
Well, it's quite a while since we last met.
Yes, that knee of mine 2 years ago, no?
Has it been all right?
Perfectly. I rubbed that liniment in a couple of times and forgot all about it.
Good. But we've met since then, you know. Do you remember the social club dance?
Oh, at Christmas. Yes, we had quite a good crowd that evening.
Yes, yes. A lot of young people, I noticed.
We encourage the young ones all we can. We make a rule to elect at least 3 under-20s to the committee every year.
Good idea. It keeps you pretty busy, treasurer of a big club like that.
It does, rather. It takes a good deal of time, but I enjoy it.
Well, shall we sit down?
Right. my wife told you on the phone what happened?
Yes, she told me everything you had told her. As a matter of fact, I knew last night that, something had happened.
How?
Well, the police rang through to the hospital to ask if anyone had been brought in. I was there at the time. They gave your name, of course.
Oh, I'm sorry my wife did that.
Well, I think she did the only thing possible in the circumstances.
Oh, quite, I realize that, but, you know, one doesn't want a lot of talk.
No, of course not. But I don't think you need worry.
Oh, I hope not.
Now, I understand from your wife that you left for the city in the usual way yesterday morning.
Yes.
You came home this evening at your usual time, believing it was the same day, when it was actually a day later.
Yes. It's all so queer, Doctor. I got home as I always do, just at 7. I was feeling perfectly all right. I found my wife in a terrible state. Well, when she told me what had happened, I thought she must have dreamt it. I couldn't believe it until I saw the date on the newspapers and the bank manager rang up and said I hadn't been there all day. I still can't believe it. It's like a nightmare.
Yes, but do sit down again.
Oh, sorry.
Look, I don't want you to take this in the wrong way. But you do realize that anything you tell me is in absolute confidence. Even from your wife.
Yes, of course.
Well, it's impossible for me to help you unless I know everything. If there's anything you don't want Mrs. Preston to know...
I can tell you nothing more than I told my wife, and I've told her everything I know.
Well, we must try and explore and see what we can discover. Now, between the time you left home yesterday morning and the time you got back tonight, there's only one thing that could have happened. There must have been a lapse of memory that apparently lasted for a full 24 hours.
But surely, when a man loses his memory, there must be a moment when he recovers it and wonders where he is and what's happened.
No, not necessarily.
No?
You see, the return of the memory isn't always a sudden thing. It's quite possible that it gradually returned, that you gradually noticed familiar things around you and picked up the thread of your normal routine without even being aware of the lapse.
But where could I have been for 24 hours? Where could I have washed and shaved? Well, look, there's still a crease in my trousers. My coat and hat were perfectly clean and brushed. Where could I have been?
Well, that's what we've got to try and find out.
Yes.
Have you been quite well recently?
Perfectly.
Nothing seriously worrying you?
Nothing to account for this.
I see. Was there anything unusual in your journey to London?
Nothing at all. I got to the station a few minutes before the train came in. I met Major Watson on the platform, the president of our social club. We travelled up together and talked about club affairs. The new tennis courts we're laying out in the general meeting next month. I remember that perfectly. Nothing happened at the bank because the manager told my wife on the telephone I was there all day.
And you left the bank at the usual time?
Yes. You said just now that everything I tell you will be in confidence.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, there is one thing. It's really such a trivial, harmless thing. It couldn't possibly have any connection with all this. But you must understand that my wife and I are perfectly happy together.
I'm sure of that.
But everybody's got little things they like and dislike. My wife doesn't like alcoholic drinks.
Hmm?
Oh, she's not a fanatic or anything like that. I'm perfectly sure that if I wanted beer or sherry or anything else in the house, she wouldn't raise the least objection, but I respect her feelings about this and don't have them. In any case, I drink very little and don't need them in the house at all, but, well, like a lot of other men, I enjoy a glass of sherry in the evening when I finish my day's work.
Oh, so do I, very much.
It's been a habit of mine for some while to drop in at a little place and have a glass of sherry on the way to the station every evening.
Well, why not?
It was just after the war. We were short of staff, and I was working until 7 every night. At 6 o'clock, I used to go out and have my drink and go back to finish my work. It's a little pub in a side street near the bank, run by a brother and two sisters. Very nice people. Joe's around 40, I suppose, and Ellen's about the same age. Peggy's much younger, under 30, I imagine. I know what you're thinking, Doctor.
Oh, no, not at all. Why should I?
It's all perfectly harmless, I can assure you. We'd pass the time of day, have a joke or two while I sat drinking my sherry, that's all. Well, then a few years ago, this late work finished, and I was free to leave the office at the usual time, at 5 o'clock. I was rather disappointed to think that this little interlude would have to end. They didn't open till 6, of course. I could scarcely hang about for an hour waiting.
So you went round to the side door?
Yes.
Well, I used to do that at a pub in Winchester during the war.
Well, they live over the premises, and Joe said I only had to go round to the private door and knock and go in. It was against the licensing rules, but it really wasn't a very serious offence. I suppose it was rather silly not to tell my wife, but I just let her think I still worked at the office until 6.
Oh, well, I don't think that's very terrible. I imagine a good many other city men do the same. Why didn't you tell your wife?
I really don't know why I haven't. Mainly, I think, because I didn't want her to feel that she was depriving me of something I could easily have at home. Oh, she'd have insisted on getting the sherry in, but I didn't want it in. I liked having it where I do at that time of the evening.
Mm-hmm, I understand.
If I suddenly told her now I'd been doing this, she might think it was somehow connected with what happened yesterday, but, well, I'm sure it isn't.
You went there as usual last night?
I arrived just after 5 and left at 6 in good time to catch my train.
And nothing unusual happened?
Nothing at all. I just sat there in their private room having my sherry. Then, well, we all went into the bar and had a game of darts. I remember 6 o'clock striking from St. Paul's as I said goodnight.
Then it all boils down to the next hour. Because normally, you'd have been home at 7.
Yes.
Can you remember how you were feeling on the walk to the station?
I was just feeling happy and contented, like I always do, walking to the station after my sherry.
Did you have more than usual to drink that evening, by any chance?
No, I'm certain of that. 2 is my limit, and they never press me.
And you arrived at Cannon Street in good time for your train?
Yes. There is just one thing. I do remember a curious feeling as I went into the station and looked up at the big clock. Can't exactly describe it, just a vague, uncertain kind of feeling. I remember looking very hard at the clock. So hard that I can see it quite distinctly now. The white face, the big black hands that pointed to 6:15.
Ah, now that might be something.
Then I remember rather a dazed, uncertain feeling as I went for my train. I had to think before I could recollect the number of the platform, though it's always 5 every night.
Well, can you remember the journey home?
It's such a routine journey, I don't remember any special incidents.
Was there anybody you knew on the train coming down?
I don't think so.
You're not really very sure about that journey, are you?
Not absolutely.
Sorry, I thought perhaps you'd finished.
Come in, Mrs. Preston, do.
I'm not disturbing you.
No, not at all. That's it, Mr. Preston doesn't mind.
No, of course. Now, come in, Janet, please.
Well, I can promise you one thing, Mrs. Preston. Your husband's perfectly well in himself. A case of lost memory is disturbing, naturally. But there's no need to be alarmed.
Thank you, Doctor.
Mr. Preston, have you ever had a serious illness or accident?
No, never. I've always kept very well.
What were you doing during the war?
At the bank, as usual. I was an air raid warden.
You went through some pretty bad bombing?
Oh, yes, this was Fly Bomb Alley here, you know.
Well, can you remember any especially bad incident?
Oh, well,
there was that one in Elm Tree Road, David.
Yes, I had a narrow squeak that night. A fly bomb came down on a piece of wasteland just behind the houses. I wasn't more than 100 yards away. Naturally, the blast was pretty bad. I wasn't hit by anything, but I was deaf in this ear for a few days.
Did you have medical attention?
Well, I didn't think it was necessary. I felt all right by the deafness, and that soon wore off.
Well, a shock like that can play funny tricks on you sometimes. We've had a lot of it since the war. You know, perfectly normal people can have a thing like this happen without even remembering the original cause of it. It may come from a severe shock like this one of yours, or it may be the result of a long period of strain.
You mean there's permanent injury?
Oh, no, not at all. Well, it may be a good thing, in a way. It may clear the system of a suppressed nervous condition. Once it's over, you're free of it for good.
If only I knew when it happened and what I was doing all those hours.
I think we're fairly clear when it happened.
Are you?
Your husband remembers feeling a bit queer at Cannon Street Station.
You mean he lost his memory at Cannon Street last night and stayed there until this evening?
It's quite possible.
Oh, but surely the station master or somebody would have done something.
Well, you could stay in a big place like that for hours without attracting any special attention.
Yes.
You may have gone into the restaurant and had supper. You may have gone out to the station and walked back to the city. This morning, you may have gone to a barber's shop and had a shave. This evening, you may have returned subconsciously to Cannon Street. The sight of the station clock may have been the thing that brought your memory back.
I can't believe that. I know every inch of London, every street. If I walked about all night and all today, why shouldn't one of a thousand other familiar things help my memory to come back?
Familiar things would tend to help, of course. That's why I think it happened the other way. That feeling on the station, your confusion about the platform your train left from, the uncertainty about the people in the carriage, all that sounds to me like the period of losing the memory.
You mean it may have happened in the train coming home?
That's something we don't know. Perhaps after a good night's sleep, you may think of some little thing that'll piece the rest together. Well, I'll look in at about 10 in the morning.
I must leave for the bank at 8. I promised the manager I'd be there early.
Well, I wouldn't go to the bank tomorrow if I were you.
Oh, but I...
Have a quiet day. Don't worry. Do the garden. Go for a walk. As I say, I don't think you'll have any return of this.
There's one thing that's worrying me a bit, Doctor, about the bank.
Hmm?
It's practically certain I shall be manager of the Eastbourne branch next year.
Well?
It's a good appointment, but it may affect things very much if the directors hear about this. Naturally, I don't expect you to make a false statement, but is there any way of preventing the bank from knowing what happened?
But, I understand that they do know. Didn't you say that you told the manager on the phone, Mrs. Preston?
Well, I had to. What else could I say?
Yes, but you only said I hadn't come home. You never mentioned lost memory.
Well, of course I didn't. I didn't know.
Supposing I said that, well, that there was some misunderstanding. If I say I spent the night with friends and my wife had forgotten, or I'd forgotten to tell her.
Well, that's entirely up to you. If I'm asked for a certificate, then, of course, I would have to say what happened.
Well, I wouldn't need a certificate for 2 days' absence. Could I go to the bank the day after tomorrow?
Oh, yes, I think so.
I could say I was taken ill at my friend's, and by misunderstanding, they didn't send the message to the bank or to my wife.
Well, it's no affair of mine what you decide to say. I'm only concerned if I'm asked for a certificate.
Well, you won't be. I'll ring the manager in the morning and explain.
I wonder if that's the police sergeant.
Well, did you ring up to say I'd come back?
Yes, just before I rang the doctor.
It's not a thing the police have to do anything about, is it, Doctor?
Oh, no. Well, but I'd see him for a moment if I were you, now that you are home.
Oh, then let him in, Janet.
Yes, all right.
Well, I'll send you some sleeping pills.
Oh, I never take things like that.
Well, go to bed early, then.
Oh.
And have a good rest, and I'll come in at about 10 tomorrow morning.
It's Major Watson, David.
Oh, hello, Major. Come along in. Do you know Major Watson, Doctor? President of our social club.
Yes. How are you, Major?
Why, I'm pretty good, thanks. I saw you at that Christmas dance of ours. You came as a guest, didn't you?
Yes, I came as a guest.
What do you think of the supper?
Oh, excellent.
You can tell a man by his friends and a club by his food. That's what I always say. Have you read him as a member, Preston?
No, not yet. I think we ought to.
Of course he ought. You propose him and I'll second him.
Yeah,
it's
right.
It's the best club for miles round. Bridge, billiards, everything. Including a monthly brains trust. And we've just been running a sweepstake on Zarevich to raise funds for a new hard tennis court. Taking over 500 quid. The club takes 20%, so we didn't do too badly.
Very well indeed.
I tell you, I'd take it if we hadn't closed on Sunday with a draw tomorrow.
Well, if I'm a member next year, I'll have a chance of winning it. Good night.
Good night. Good night.
No, I'll see you out, Doctor. I'd like to have a word with you.
All right.
I just wanted to ask.
Yeah. Nice chap.
Yes.
I was only thinking the other day. We ought to rope in a few doctors. Got a couple of chemists, you know, but no doctors. But what's he here for? Aren't you well?
Nothing much. Just a bit of tummy trouble, that's all.
Oh, I wonder why he went on the train this morning. Be at home all day?
No. Matter of fact, I spent last night with friends. Something I had for supper disagreed with me, so I stayed the night with them. I've only just got home.
You say you spent last night with friends?
Yes.
You mean you slept the night there?
I just told you. Some old friends on the other side of London. I go there now and then.
Oh. Well, I just came to see that you have got the sweepstake money.
The sweepstake money?
Hmm. You did take it away from the club last night, didn't you?
What?
Robinson, the club steward, said you were there in the office at 10 o'clock. You must be pretty late for dinner with those friends of yours on the other side of London who didn't leave the club till after 10. You did go to the club last night and take the money, didn't you?
I tell you, I spent the night with friends.
You never went to the club at all?
No.
Oh.
What did the club steward tell you?
Whatever he told me, it was a damn lie. The man's a dirty, low-down thief.
What did he tell you?
He came round to my house last night to leave the keys, because he's going off on his holidays today. He said he turned out all the lights and spent half an hour in his pantry clearing up. But just as he was going, he saw a light in the office. He thought he left it on by mistake, so he went in to turn it out and found you there at the safe.
He found me at the safe?
Yes. He said it was open, and he saw the sweepstake money, all those bundles of notes, on a chair. He said you told him you weren't happy about leaving all that money in the safe, and you were going to take care of it until the prizes were paid out. Do you mean that's all a lie?
I've told you I wasn't there.
The damn thief. He had it all so smooth and pat, I never doubted him. He was artful enough to say that he quite agreed with you taking it, because he thought himself it was too much to leave in that small safe. Ah. And then, just as he was going, he slipped in a bit that I understand now.
What was that?
He said that you acted strange and lost your temper and told him to get out and mind his own business. Well, knowing that you never liked the fellow, I didn't doubt that either. But you see why he said it.
Why?
To make me wonder about you when we found the money was gone and give him more time to get clear. And now that this scoundrel has had a clear day's start.
Are you certain the money's gone?
Of course I'm certain. I went round this evening. £515 of club money, members' money, with a draw tomorrow night.
Oh, Lord.
Well, we must get the police on him at once. If they pick him up quick, there's a chance he won't have had time to spend it. Can I use your phone?
Major Watson, don't do anything tonight.
Don't do anything? What do you mean?
The scandal it would mean for the club.
Scandal? Good heavens, man, it's a dirty, barefaced robbery. He tries to throw it on you, and you say don't do anything.
There may be some mistake, some misunderstanding.
How can there be a mistake? The money's gone.
Well, it may not have been stolen.
Well, if it wasn't, where is it? We counted the money ourselves on Sunday night and locked it up. If Robinson didn't take it, who did?
I don't know. I only know that I'm club treasurer, and I feel myself responsible. If there is a mistake, then it would be a terrible thing to put the police onto Robinson and accuse him if he's innocent.
Well, what's your idea? Sit back and talk and let the dirty skunk get away with it? You know, we aren't insured against losing money.
I tell you, I feel responsible.
Well, it beats me. You never liked the man, you never trusted him. And now he's had the dirty on us, you want to cover him up.
Look, I'm tired tonight, Major. I've had a bad day. I'm not well.
Do you suppose I'm well after this? Huh. What are you going to tell us something tomorrow when we meet to draw the horses? Pretend the money's still in the safe or say we don't know who stole it when we do?
Will you wait until the morning, Major? Let's decide then.
Give him another clear night for his getaway.
It's very serious to accuse a man until we're certain.
Look, what are we going to know in the morning if we don't know now?
Please.
Well, I don't know what's happened to you, Preston. I thought you were a businessman, and I thought you put the club above everything.
I'll ring you first thing in the morning.
I'll probably ring you before you ring me. I'm president of the club, remember. I've got my responsibilities.
David, isn't it terrible?
How did you know?
I met Mrs. Warren just now when I saw the doctor out.
Well, how did she know?
It was in the late paper.
What was in the paper?
But didn't Major Watson come to tell you? Do you mean he hadn't heard?
Heard what?
They found Robinson, the club steward, this evening in that little wood by the pond on the common. He'd been murdered.
Good morning, Mr. Preston.
Good morning.
I'm Inspector Hemingway. I spoke to you on the telephone just now.
Oh, yes, that's right. Will you come in?
Thank you. Well, what a lovely show of those dwarf chrysanthemums you've got out there.
Yes, I go in for those.
That's a wonderful touch they give to an autumn garden. Well, how do you get such fine colours?
Oh, I managed to get a little good manure from the riding school.
Not much of the good old stable stuff about these days.
No, I'm afraid there isn't.
You know, down my way, the milkman still comes round with a horse and cart. And the people with gardens all wait with pails and shovels, hoping for a bit of luck.
Well, that's one way.
The trouble is, horses are so regular in their habits that the same man gets it every morning. may I sit here?
Yes, of course.
Well, it's a bit of a shock for you, this Robinson business.
Yes.
I never met the chap myself. Stranger around here, wasn't he?
Yes. He came from the north, I think.
Yes, I got a bit about him from Major Watson this morning. Lonely sort of chap, by all accounts. The landlady says he's got a brother somewhere, but we haven't traced him yet. You're the treasurer of the club, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
I suppose you knew him pretty well.
Well, only as club steward. He'd bring me the accounts and I'd check them over and pay the money into the bank.
Were they always in order? No trouble?
No, none at all. He wasn't a good housekeeper. There were small mistakes and additions, but nothing deliberate.
Did he do everything in the club?
Well, there's a woman who does the cooking, and a little fellow who works in the kitchen at weekends. He works at the hospital the rest of the week, so Robinson was practically on his own.
Mm-hmm. What's the name of the cook?
Mrs. Pritchett.
Miss Pritchett. And the name of the other chap?
I don't remember.
Oh, I suppose I could contact him at the hospital.
Of course.
Major Watson told me a queer story. I think he saw you last night.
Yes, he came in.
From his account, this fellow Robinson had some idea of involving you, Mr. Preston.
Yes, so Major Watson told me.
Of course, we've no proof yet that he took the money at all. He hadn't got it on him when he was found.
He hadn't?
No. I don't imagine he really thought he could involve a man like you, but it was the time he wanted. Still, if he did think he could involve you, he was certainly out of luck, because Major Watson says you were staying with friends on the other side of London that night.
Yes.
Well, of course, we have to check up on everything in a case like this. It's only a routine matter, so if you'll just give me the name and address of the people you stayed with on Monday night, we can clear that up right away.
I spent the night with an old friend. His name is Wainwright.
Yes, Wainwright. Will you give me his address?
182 Manor Farm Road, Wembley.
182 Manor Farm Road, Wembley. I was over at Wembley for a day at the Olympic Games in the summer of 48. Did you see them?
No.
It was the day of the marathon race. I'll never forget that finish. Terrific. It's pathetic in a way.
Hmm?
That poor Belgian fellow losing in the last few yards after all those miles, remember?
Yes.
Yes, if you're a sportsman, that sort of thing nearly makes you cry.
Yes, it does.
Well, I won't keep you, Mr. Preston. They'll need you at the inquest because this story Robinson told Major Watson will come in as evidence, but you'll know in good time. It's bad luck on your club.
Yes, it is.
Were you insured against that kind of robbery?
No, they won't insure money.
Well, let's hope we get it back for you.
Yes.
I don't suppose you could spare a few of those chrysanthemums.
Well, of course.
My wife loves a bit of colour in the flat. We don't have a garden, worse luck.
Well, I'll ask my wife to pick some.
Thanks, that's very nice of you. I'll drop by and pick them up on my way home, if I might, around 5 o'clock.
I'll see they're ready for you.
Fine. Well, we'll keep you informed.
Thanks. I'll see you out.
No, that's all right. Don't you trouble. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
What did the inspector say?
I'll tell you in a minute.
Who are you ringing up?
Please, Janet, I can't talk if you're here.
Oh, sorry.
I promised the inspector some chrysanthemums. Would you go out and pick him some?
Everything's all right, then.
Yes, yes. Now run along, please.
All right. I'm going.
Hello? Hello, I want to speak to Mr. Wainwright, please. What? When did he go away? Last Saturday. I must get in touch with him. It's very urgent. But you must know what hotel he's staying at. I see. No, there's no message. Goodbye.
Did he say what colours he likes?
Colours? What colours?
Well, you said the inspector wanted some chrysanthemums.
Oh, it doesn't matter now.
Oh, but David, dear, you told me a minute ago...
Or a few of each, that'll be all right.
Oh, I'll go. I expect it's Dr. Sparling.
Good morning, Mrs. Preston.
Good morning, Doctor. Will you go in? I'm just going to pick some flowers. My husband's in the sitting room.
Oh, right. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you feeling?
All right, then.
Did you have a good night?
No, I couldn't sleep.
I didn't think you would. That's why I wanted to give you something.
You heard what's happened?
No.
It was in the paper.
Oh, you mean that club steward?
Yes.
Yes, I have heard. Well, now, have you been able to piece things together at all?
No.
No small thoughts or memory that might help us?
No, there's nothing.
Well, shall we try running through things again, quietly and slowly, to see whether perhaps...
Oh, well, for heaven's sake, no. I did all that in the night for hours. I began to think I was going mad. It was too horrible.
Now, you mustn't think like that.
You don't suppose I can close my mind to it and not think at all?
No, but you...
Why don't you say what's in your mind and have done with it?
I know exactly what you're thinking. Every imaginative person suffering a lapse of memory fills the blank periods with all kinds of things that might have happened. But, my dear chap, if you connect this matter of the club steward with yourself, well, it's just absurd.
Why is it absurd?
Because a person suffering from lost memory still retains his own character. If a criminal lunatic lost his memory, he probably continued to behave like a criminal lunatic. But a normal, honest man would continue to behave normally and honestly.
Suppose a normal, honest man hated somebody. Wouldn't he go on hating that person subconsciously when his memory had gone?
Yes, I imagine he would. But you didn't hate this man, Robinson.
I did hate him.
You did?
How can I explain it? From the day he came to the club, I disliked him. I opposed his appointment because of that, and I'm sure he found out I opposed him.
Now, what made you do that?
Oh, how can I say? I've never had any bad feelings for any man in my life except for him. Partly, I think it was because I enjoy the club so much. I hoped to found it, and I liked its pleasant, friendly atmosphere. Directly I set eyes on this fellow, I knew he was wrong for a club like ours. I just liked his type, his big, fat body and his pale, flabby face. Most of all, I just liked his eyes, the way he looked at me. I don't suppose I had any proper grounds for opposing his appointment. He brought a good character from the army. He'd been in some kind of catering job. Oh, the committee overruled me. Naturally, I was hurt at being overruled in a club that I'd helped to found.
Did he prove himself to be the wrong man?
Oh, he did his work well enough. He didn't drink or anything like that. But the more I saw of him, the more I loathed him. I used to look forward to going to the club, but after he came, I began to hate it. I felt his eyes on me every time he came into the room. I felt something evil and horrible about him. I knew he'd glory in hurting me if he could and was waiting for the chance.
Imagination can play cruel tricks. That's why I told you to stay at home today.
You don't think I'm suddenly imagining all this? For months now, I wake up in the night fuming at what this man has done to destroy my pleasure in the club, wondering what I can do to get rid of him.
But you've got to be sensible. You never in your wildest moment thought of murdering him.
Naturally, I didn't.
Then you're not very likely to have murdered him on Monday night.
Do you know what happened on Monday night? A few hours before he died, he told Major Watson he saw me in the club taking the sweepstake money.
Hmm? Well, you can prove you didn't do that either.
How can I?
By common sense and reason.
Yes, but how?
If a man were desperately in need of money, he might be drawn subconsciously to a place where money could be found.
But that is possible.
If he definitely had theft in mind before he lost his memory. But if you're going to tell me that you've been calmly planning robbery and murder for the past few weeks, then I don't believe you. And what's more, I can't help you, because you're making no attempt to help yourself. Now sit down and keep calm.
Sorry. When you left me last night, I hoped I'd wake up with everything clear. But when I heard about this murder, I didn't dare to sleep. Reason told me that if my memory remained completely blank, then I could honestly defend myself against everything they accused me of. I could answer with a clear conscience, and I had no knowledge or recollection. But if it did come back, if I knew what happened, well, then I'd have to tell the truth or wait for it to be dragged out of me in court. I was dead tired when I went to bed, but I fought all I could to keep myself awake. I had a feeling that if I could get through just one night...
But you did go to sleep and dreamt every horrible thing on earth.
No, I didn't sleep. I never lost the sound of the rain trickling outside and the trains and traffic in the distance. It began to come in little bits at first, like you said it would. Queer little disconnected things. A chestnut tree, some strips of thin metal tinkling like bells, and a man's feet rustling through dead leaves. One side of my brain fought against it. The other side went probing on. Then, suddenly, it came together. I was on the common. I saw every detail. The moon was shining and the wind was rattling those little metal strips that hang around allotments to scare the birds. I saw the pond and the line of chestnut trees with the dry leaves coming down and the two old dugouts under the mound. I was walking along the path beside the pond in a desperate kind of fear. And this man Robinson was following, creeping along in the dark like a fat grey slug. I went between the trees and down the steps to one of those dugouts. There was a heap of old sacking in one corner. I put the money under it and covered it over with sand, and all the time I could hear him up there roaming about in the dead leaves. Then I went up the steps and looked out. I could just see him going into the wood, and I followed him.
When did you know that he'd been murdered?
Well, last night, when somebody told my wife.
Did this person tell your wife how it was committed?
I didn't ask her.
How was it committed when he came back to you last night?
I followed him into the wood, and... well, then I tore my mind away from it. It was too horrible.
You see, perfect autosuggestion. Doesn't that make you see reason? You dreamed what you were told by your wife.
If only I could believe that.
And you added to the dream what Major Watson told you about the stolen money. And you woke up and your information about the details came to an end.
You said my memory might return, so how can you be really certain?
I can only weigh the two things together and go for the one that's more probable.
If I were asked point blank whether I remember anything of those lost hours, I mean, if anybody in authority were to ask me on my oath, would it be honest to say that I still remember nothing?
Well, in your place, I certainly would. Whether it was honest, I don't know, but that's what I'd do if I were questioned.
I have been questioned.
When?
Just now. An inspector came to see me. He wanted to know where I was that night. You see, I told Major Watson I spent that night with friends. He told the police, and they came to ask me the name and address of the people.
Well?
I couldn't very well go back on what I told the Major, could I? If I'd gone back on what I'd told him and said I'd lost my memory, I might just have asked to be arrested.
Well, what did you tell him?
I told him I spent Monday night in Wembley with a man named Wainwright. He's my best and oldest friend. I knew if I rang him up and asked him to tell the police if they inquired that I was with him that night, he'd do it without question.
Did he agree to that?
A caretaker answered the phone. Wainwright went off on a motor tour on Saturday morning.
Oh, I'm afraid this is rather serious.
What do you think I ought to do?
Nothing until you've had proper advice. No, I think a solicitor would know the right thing to do.
I haven't got a solicitor. Do you know anybody?
Well, most people around here go to Mr. Petherbridge.
I've never met him.
They're an old family firm. They've been here for years. It's all to the good to have somebody who knows the local police and the way to talk to them. I'll drive round and see if I can get him. Oh, Mrs. Preston, this is Mr. Petherbridge.
How do you do?
How do you do? It was good of you to come so quickly.
Oh, not at all. Luckily, I was in my office.
Will you please come in?
Thank you.
This is my husband, Mr. Petherbridge.
How do you do?
How do you do? Would you sit down?
Oh, thank you. Well, Dr. Sparling gave me a brief outline of the facts on the way here, Mr. Preston.
I see.
It's a thousand pities that you felt it necessary to mislead the police with an untrue statement. It makes it very difficult.
Yes, I know.
I shall be obliged to ask you some questions that may seem unpleasant, but a legal advisor must be in possession of the entire truth before he can decide upon the best means of defense.
If Dr. Sparling told you everything I told him, then you have the entire truth.
My husband lost his memory, Mr. Petherbridge.
Yes, quite.
But you said something about defense as though he'd done something wrong. You surely don't have to defend yourself simply because you lose your memory.
No. But you have to realize that your husband made a grave misstatement to an official inquiry into his movements on Monday night. I'm afraid that in itself would constitute an offense in the eyes of the police.
He made that statement at a time of stress and anxiety. I think the police should be told that.
I understand this statement involved another person, a close friend of yours who was, in fact, in no way connected with your movements on Monday night.
That's perfectly true.
Well, that friend might have felt compelled to support your request and declare that you were in his house that evening?
He wouldn't have felt compelled. He'd have done it gladly and willingly, as I would for him.
You were asking him to commit perjury. If he'd been at home, and if he'd agreed, then he might easily have found himself committed as an accessory after the fact.
Are you for me or against me in this, Mr. Betheridge?
Well, I warned you I'd have to ask some unpleasant questions, Mr. Preston. I should also have warned you that I'd have to remind you of some unpleasant facts.
Then, will you make one point quite clear to me?
If I can.
If a man committed a crime in a period of lost memory, would it be judged like a crime committed by a man in a normal condition?
Well, that's extremely difficult to answer. We should have to search for precedents and examine them. I've no knowledge of any acquittal upon the plea that the accused had lost his memory at the time when he committed it, although I've no doubt that the plea has often been made.
You don't believe I did lose my memory?
No, I didn't say that. If you tell me, upon your honor, that you did in fact lose your memory, then I accept it without question.
Thank you.
Our task will be to convince the police. But I'm afraid you've given them a tremendous advantage in making a false statement of your whereabouts on Monday night. In a court of law, a good counsel might go a long way with that.
I think there's another thing in Mr. Preston's mind. I told you he had some impressions. Well, personally, I think it was a dream.
You mean concerning this money?
Yes. A man can imagine all kinds of things. But there is a chance of his memory coming back in fragments, even completely.
So it may be difficult to decide what part is imaginary and what part is true.
Yes, exactly. But it's easy enough to settle about this dream last night simply by going to those dugouts and seeing whether the money's there.
I think that would be most unwise.
Why?
Well, the police would have men on duty in the neighborhood of a murder. We should be inviting suspicion. In any case, even if the money's not there...
It would at least settle Mr. Preston's mind.
Yes, I know, but that's not the important issue. A dream which turns out to be imaginary is no proof of a man's innocence. Definite clues are the factors that really count. Mr. Preston, is there any personal property that you can't account for? Any small things that you had with you before you lost your memory, which are missing now?
Yes, your gloves and a handkerchief, David.
Oh. Did the handkerchief have your name on it?
My initials, DHP.
Can you describe the gloves?
Ordinary brown leather, almost new.
Oh, he may have left them in the train.
Yes, you must hope that he did. Well, Mr. Preston, at the moment there's only one thing to advise. Absolute frankness. I suggest that we communicate with the police at once and tell them that you wish to correct your previous statement.
Well, what will they do then?
It depends on so many things. Whether they have clues or witnesses to support them, the extent to which they accept your husband's statement that he did actually lose his memory.
But he did. We know that.
We have to prove it, Mrs. Preston. Normally one does that by establishing an alibi. Unhappily, your husband sought to prove a false one, and we've no means of telling what view the police will take of it. We shall endeavor to explain, of course, but they may feel their case strong enough to stand upon circumstantial evidence alone. They may proceed on those grounds. So we must engage the best possible counsel to defend you.
What'll that cost?
In a difficult case like this, there's a psychological value in engaging an outstanding one.
I don't quite see what you mean.
I mean that an important counsel commands a larger fee than a lesser man. If you can show yourself in a position to meet that fee, then automatically you show the jury that you are unlikely to have stolen out of urgent need.
What would an important counsel cost?
Well, I don't think it would be a long case. Counsel's fees may be, well, 250 guineas. Expert medical evidence, perhaps 50 guineas. If the case went against us and an appeal were made, well, then perhaps another 100 guineas.
Argo.
Yes, I would say that 500 guineas would provide for everything.
I'm sorry to disturb you again, Mrs. Preston. I'd like another word with your husband, if I may.
Will you come in?
Thank you.
Good morning, Inspector.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Petherbridge.
Mr. Preston has asked me to act for him. You know Dr. Sparling?
Yes, of course. Good morning, Doctor.
Morning, Inspector.
I expect you know why I called again, Mr. Preston.
Yes.
Our Wembley station called at Mr. Wainwright's house.
Yes, I know. Mr. Wainwright left for his holidays on Saturday.
Yes. If you knew Mr. Wainwright had gone away, I'm wondering why you told me you stayed with him.
I didn't know.
You mean you didn't know when you told me this morning?
That's correct.
If you'll excuse me, Inspector, wouldn't it be
better... quite all right, Mr. Featherbridge. This is just an informal talk, that's all. I don't intend to make any notes.
Oh. Very well.
Mr. Preston, the caretaker at Mr. Wainwright's house told our people that somebody rang up for Mr. Wainwright about 10 o'clock. Was that you, by any chance?
Yes. I intended to ask Mr. Wainwright...
That's all right. It occurred to me you may have given that information by mistake. That you stayed with Mr. Wainwright some other time and got it mixed up with a visit to some other friend on Monday night. When I called this morning, I explained I only needed the information to rule out the story Robinson told Major Watson.
Yes, but
I'm not asking for a minute-by-minute account of everything you did that evening, because a man can't often do a thing like that when he's suddenly asked. You see what I mean? I only just want a rough idea.
I can't tell you anything of what I did on Monday night or anything about Tuesday until I came home in the evening, because I had a lapse of memory.
A lapse of memory, I see. Do you know when you lost your memory and when it came back?
I've been able to account for everything up to 6:15 on Monday evening at Cannon Street Station. I remember feeling strange on the station. I had some difficulty in remembering the platform my train left from.
You mean you think you were losing it then?
He was either losing it or it was coming back.
I see. About that safe in the clubhouse, do you happen to know how many keys there are to it?
There are three. Major Watson has one, I've got one, and there's another kept at the bank down here.
I imagine you keep yours in a safe place.
I keep it here with my other keys. My office keys, a latch key to the house. This is the key to the safe.
So Robinson, the steward, didn't have one then?
Oh, no, there was no need for him to go to the safe. He had a cash box of his own.
Oh. Have you got a key to the club itself?
Oh, yes, with the others. Here.
Do you drop in sometimes after the steward closes up for the night?
Occasionally. I've got a desk there for club papers. Sometimes I've walked round after dinner.
You've no recollection at all of going there on Monday night?
No.
Well, now, I wonder if you'd just walk round to the station with me. You know, it's one of our routines to take down a statement. It's just a formality. I've taken one from Major Watson this morning, and I shall be taking quite a few more.
I'll do whatever you need.
It won't take long.
Shall I be coming back?
Why, yes, of course.
Would it be all right if I came too?
You want to make a statement, Mrs. Preston?
No, but I think my husband would like me to come, wouldn't you, David? I mean, I'd like to wait for you.
Well, I think I'd stay here, Janet. There's really no need.
But I would rather come with you.
I imagine you were wearing what you might call a city suit on Monday.
Yes.
Do you mind if we take that along? And the shoes you were wearing?
What do you want those?
Oh, it's just another bit of routine.
If you need them, I'll get them.
I'll come up and help pack them.
You've no objection to my being with my client when he makes his statement?
No, not at all. We'd prefer you to. Well, we won't keep your husband's things for long, Mrs. Preston. Good clothes aren't easy to get these days.
I look after all his things myself.
You haven't cleaned or pressed the suit since he went to the city on Monday?
No, I haven't had time. We've been so worried.
Oh, that's all right. Oh, we'll be with you in a few minutes, Mr. Featherbridge.
Right.
Shall we go upstairs and collect your things?
Yes, of course. Shall I lead the way?
Thank you.
Mr. Featherbridge.
Yes, Mrs. Preston.
About the fees that you mentioned just now, I'm wondering, if I were to pay them myself, could you do anything to prevent my husband from knowing?
Well, how could we do that?
Could you say that the barrister had offered to defend him without fees?
Would he believe that, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. Look, if I tell you something, will you promise not to say a word about it to my husband?
Well, certainly.
I'll go if you like, Mrs. Preston.
No, I want you to know too, Doctor. I think it'll help you to understand why my husband seems so worried and difficult.
Very well.
You see, for a long time he's been terribly in need of money, although I only knew about it last week.
Oh?
His father was an agent who travelled round collecting money for his firm, and then one day he couldn't pay. I believe it was betting. They were going to have him arrested, but David said that he'd pay back every penny his father had taken.
I see.
First of all, he sold an insurance policy, but that wasn't nearly enough, so he borrowed some from friends, and the rest he got from a moneylender. Gradually, he paid back all his friends, but the moneylender kept adding expenses and things, and now it's nearly double what it was to begin with.
You say your husband only told you of this last week.
No, he never told me.
But you said that...
Yes, I saw a letter. I went to a drawer in his desk for something, and I couldn't help seeing it. It was a horrible letter.
From this moneylender?
Yes. It said if all the money wasn't paid in a month, he'd tell my husband's bank and then get them to stop it out of his salary. I had to speak to him about it. You see, I've got a little money of my own, an annuity I bought with a legacy. I wanted to sell it there and then, but he was furious. He said nothing would make him use my money.
If the police happen to ask for any statement, Mrs. Preston, I think you'd be well advised to say nothing whatever about this.
Oh, I wouldn't dream of telling them. David would never forgive me. But you do see why we must pay those fees without my husband knowing. He couldn't hope to pay himself. He'd rather not be defended at all if he knew that it came from my money.
Yes. My own charges will be purely nominal, but... Well, we must face the fact that counsel will require a fee. Oh,
I'll never believe that David did this terrible thing.
They haven't said so, Mrs. Preston. And it's possible they never will.
But they think it. I can see that. If they don't, why does the inspector want to take away his clothes? They do that to criminals. It's horrible.
It's something they always have to do.
I'm sure he'd like me to go with him. Do you think I could?
Of course.
Well, I'll give you the annuity papers tomorrow. You will get the best possible man, won't you?
You can rest assured we'll get the very best.
Thank you. I'll go and put on my things.
You know, Dr. Sparling, it's a very difficult position.
Yes, it certainly is. Hello, who can that be? Can you see through the window?
Yes. It's Major Watson.
Ah, well, I'll go and let him in.
Oh, hello, Doctor. I came along to see Preston.
Well, you can't see him now. He's with the police inspector upstairs.
Oh? Why upstairs?
I think you'll have to see him some other time.
Well, it was about the club account books. You see, he keeps them here on his desk.
Well, you'd better speak to Mr. Petheridge about that.
Oh, hello, Petheridge.
Hello, Major. You know, I don't think it would be wise to touch anything without police authority.
Well, it's about our sweepstake. Preston's got a list of members and what they pay for tickets. We've got a subcommittee meeting tonight. Lord knows what's going
to
happen.
If you explain at the police station, I'm sure they'll do what they can.
Why can't I see him?
He's not well.
I thought he looked funny last night. It's queer, isn't it?
What exactly do you mean?
Why, the whole thing. He told me last night he stayed with friends on Monday, somewhere on the other side of London. I heard just now the police were looking for him.
Who told you that?
Oh, chap on a bus. Police rang up the hospital, wanted to know if Preston was there.
Now, look here, Major. You mustn't take any notice of anything Preston may have said last night, because he was ill.
He seemed all right. What's wrong with him?
He suffered a lapse of memory on Monday night.
Good Lord. That's a bit thin, isn't it?
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean it's a bit thin, that's all. What's he told the police?
He's told them the truth.
Poor old Preston. Guy never thought it. Have they got the money back?
I'm not aware that Preston had anything whatever to do with the money or the murder.
But you said he told the truth.
That he lost his memory on Monday night.
Does that mean they haven't got the money back yet?
I don't know. The police have got that in hand.
Well, it can't be far away. Aren't you helping the police?
Mr. Preston has asked me to act for him.
Oh. If he didn't have anything to do with it, what's he want you for?
For that very reason, Major Watson. It sometimes happens that an innocent man needs more protection than a guilty one.
Oh, good morning, Major Watson.
Good morning.
Mr. Petheridge, the inspector said, would you mind coming up for a minute?
Yes, of course.
My husband's given him permission to look round his room, and he'd like you to be there.
Yes, I'll come. Oh, and Major... If you go to the police station and explain why you want to see the books, I've no doubt they'll help you.
Oh, all right. Do you think they'll swallow this loss of memory idea, Doctor?
Well, why not, if it's true?
Do you believe it?
Certainly I do.
Why?
Because I talked to Preston last night and again this morning, and I'm certain he's not the kind of man who would plan a careful robbery, then carry out a cold-blooded murder. I've been a doctor for nearly 20 years, Watson. I had a good deal of experience in judging people, and I'll stake my reputation on Preston.
You mean he really did lose his memory?
I told you so.
But could a fellow do all this when his memory was gone?
It's possible, but I don't believe he did.
How would they call it? Insane or something like that?
Look here. You're an old friend of his, aren't you?
I've known him 10 years or more. I pulled him in when I started my club.
Then I should have thought that you would want to help him all you can.
I don't want to make it worse for him any more than you do. But I'm president of the club and I've got to see that money back.
Why are you so convinced that he took the money?
Well, it's bound to come out, so why shouldn't I tell you? First of all, Preston was hard up. He'd borrowed money all round the club. I lent him 50 quid myself.
Yes, but he paid you all back.
Oh, he paid us back. In time.
Well, then.
I never knew a fella get clean out of debt once he started borrowing. You're a man of the world, Doctor, you know that. Another thing, he hated the club steward.
Yes, I know that.
You do?
Yes. Do you know why?
No, I don't know. But Preston was always bringing up piddly little complaints and trying to get him sacked. And here's another thing. That safe of ours wasn't open with a key. It was broken open.
If Preston had his own key, why do that?
Well, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to work that out. He broke it open because he had a key and Robertson hadn't.
Oh, really?
It was a smart job, too. I never suspected anything, but he hadn't touched the lock. He'd taken away a side panel.
The side panel of a safe?
Well, it's more strong box than a safe. It only needed a screwdriver and a bit of patience. The police showed this morning how it was done. I wasn't too happy myself about putting all that money in it, but Preston disagreed. Said it was okay. And he knew that Robbins was off on his holidays on Monday night. See?
I don't see anything but a few chance things that might happen any day to anybody.
I didn't see Preston's face when I told him Robertson had been round at my house. Men don't look like that about chance things.
What did he say?
Nothing at first. And then he pulled out that story about staying Monday night with friends. When I thought I was going to the police about the robbery, he pretty nearly went down on his knees to stop it.
But, my dear man, if he was at the safe and Robinson caught him there, then why let Robinson come round and tell you about it before doing anything?
He didn't know Robinson was coming round. That's why. Now, put yourself in his place and see what you'd do. You arrange to plant a robbery on somebody else, and the very man you're going to plant it on catches you red-handed. You tell him a yarn about taking care of the money yourself. He goes off. But you don't know whether you convinced him or not. Then you remember you've broken the damn safe open to make it look as if he'd done it. All right, so far?
Perfectly.
Okay. You're in a hell of a jam. You know Robinson's going home to get his bag and take the train to London. You know where he lives, and you know the path he'll take to the station across the common.
How is the murder done?
Knocked on the head from behind. Battered in.
Why are you saying all this against Preston?
I'm not saying a word against him. I'm giving you plain facts.
Yes. It looks bad for Preston. But then if you tie a lot of chance things together and throw in a bit of imagination, it might look just as bad for others. Even for you.
For me? That's rich.
Oh, why not? Supposing you wanted money. Well, you knew where it was just as well as Preston did. What proof have you got that Robinson ever came round to your house that night at all? Was there a witness?
My wife was there.
In the room?
She'd gone to bed, but she would have heard the bell.
Well, that's easy. You could have gone outside and rung the bell yourself if necessary. Mm-hmm. You see, we've only got your word that Robinson ever came round and accused Preston.
But
supposing you broke open the safe because you have a key. You said yourself it only needed a screwdriver and a bit of patience. At first, you mean it to look like an outside burglary, but Robinson catches you red-handed. Anything wrong with that so far?
Quite a bit. I took the pictures all Monday evening. Only got in a few minutes before Robinson called.
Can you prove it? Did you go with anyone?
My wife doesn't like the pictures. I always go alone.
You see? No proof you were at the pictures. No proof that Robinson ever called. You kill Robinson to keep him quiet. What? Then you think of Preston. You know it's common knowledge in the club that he disliked Robinson, and you knew he borrowed money. You also know that he's a quiet man who spends most evenings at home. His wife might say that he was in that evening, but the police don't trust the word of a devoted wife.
Look here,
you go around to Preston's house to feel the way, and by the grace of the devil, you discover this lapse of memory that makes even Preston doubt himself. It's wonderful. You're clear. Leave Preston alone, and his own imagination will do the rest.
You've got quite a bit of imagination yourself.
But you make one big mistake. In your over-anxiety to settle this thing squarely on Preston, you talk against him so much that you naturally make the police suspicious. to inquire into your own movements and discover that you can't prove a thing about that night.
I tell you, I was at the pictures.
When you tell the police that old yarn, they laugh. Every man trying to prove a false alibi says he was at the pictures. No, Preston's in a far stronger position than you.
Why?
Because his lapse of memory is too improbable to be a lie. But would any man in his senses commit a murder and then disappear for 24 hours without a single attempt to lay false clues, then walk back into his own sitting room and try and convince his wife that it was the previous day? Oh, no, Major, that's absurd.
And if he said he was in his right senses, the shock of killing a fellow might make him lose his wits. Then he wouldn't remember a thing.
No, I don't think so. The shock might bring his memory back. It wouldn't make him lose it.
But if he...
My dear Major, I know perfectly well you didn't have anything to do with it. I'm only saying how easy it would be for an innocent man to bring suspicion on himself by trying to incriminate another one.
I never said I wanted to.
I know. I was just talking generally, that's all.
Well, I'll be along down to the police station about those books. All I want is to get that money back.
I'm sure you'll get it back.
Well, I sincerely hope so.
I most sincerely hope so.
Tea, David?
Good.
I thought you'd like some toast.
Yes, that's fine. I've been sorting out a few things this afternoon, Janet.
Oh?
There's only the gas bill and the laundry and a small account from Rogers for the tulips. I've written checks for those. You know the bank pays my salary straight into the account, and that'll come in next Wednesday. As it's a joint account, you can write checks yourself without any trouble or worry. Oh,
certainly it won't be necessary.
I know, but I've always done these little things myself, and I wouldn't like you to be confused and troubled if you were alone.
Oh, I'm sure there isn't any need, David. If they were going to do anything, they would have done it yesterday when they had you at the police station. The inspector was so nice when you came out of that room.
Yes, he's a nice man. I'm lucky.
He told me to see that you rested when you got home and not to worry. Now, he wouldn't have been so cruel as to say a thing like that if he meant anything.
Yes, he let me come home, but he put a policeman to watch the house.
Oh, you imagine things. There's always a policeman up there by the high street.
Well, there was one there all night. I can see from the bedroom window.
You're just tormenting yourself.
If you were by yourself, Janet, I wouldn't like you to live alone. I was thinking perhaps your sister would come, or perhaps you'd rather go to her. Your sister'd have her pension, and you'd have your annuity. Are you listening, dear?
Yes.
I had a talk with the solicitor this morning about that moneylender, and there's nothing whatever for you to worry about, because he'd have no power to make any claim on you. So if he does write to you, then give the letter straight to Mr. Petherbridge. And don't do anything silly like raising money on that little annuity of yours and sending it to him. You promise me that, Janet.
Yes.
I've written this letter to the bank. I want you to post this if they take me away. I've explained everything, and I'm sure they'll do something for you after all the years I've been there.
You mustn't talk like this, David. I can't bear it.
I know, dear, but I couldn't bear it if I had to go away without feeling we'd arranged everything we possibly could.
But even if they did take you away, they couldn't treat you like a criminal. It wouldn't be human to blame you for something that happened when you weren't yourself.
We're not certain they'll believe I lost my memory at all.
But it's true. It is true, isn't it?
I swear that, dear. Whatever happened that night, I knew nothing about it. I did nothing deliberately. I really don't mind now what happens, so long as you promise to carry on and be happy.
Oh, how could I be happy?
By believing in me, dear. It's going to help me so much if you do that.
Still think it won't happen. Just your imagination all the time. Oh, you haven't slept or even rested properly since you came home. Why don't you lie down and try to get some sleep?
Yes, I think that's a good idea.
At 7 o'clock, we'll have supper. Then why not go to the pictures? It's our night, isn't it?
Yes, I forgot that. Thursday.
They didn't say you got to stay in. We'll say good evening to that policeman at the corner, and he'll say good evening back and not take a bit of notice. And you wonder why you've been so silly.
I don't know why you're so good to me.
Oh, darling. You will try and rest, won't you?
Yes, I'll go up now, straight away.
And I'll get the supper ready.
Good evening. Does Mr. Preston live here?
Yes.
Are you Mrs. Preston?
Yes.
Well, could I speak to Mr. Preston, please?
Well, he's resting. I can't disturb him now.
But it's about this trouble, this murder.
Oh. Are you from the papers?
No, I'm not. I'm a friend of Mr. Preston.
Oh. Well, you'd better come in.
Thank you. You see, I'm really quite an old friend of Mr. Preston's, and I thought I might be able to help him.
I think I know most of my husband's friends.
Oh, yes, I expect you do, but I don't suppose Dave ever told you about me.
Dave? Oh,
I'm sorry. He always let me call him Dave. Is he in trouble about this murder? I mean, really in trouble? Because if he is, I think I can help him.
You haven't told me your name.
Oh, Peggy Dobson. I work with my brother and sister at the Feathers in River Lane. In the city, you know.
The Feathers?
It's a public house. Our own place.
Oh. Well, won't you sit down?
Yes, thanks.
What is it that you want to say?
Well, I came down as quickly as I could. I only heard about this trouble at lunchtime.
My husband's name hasn't been in the papers. How did you know he was in trouble?
Well, a young man who has lunch at our place comes from down here, and he told us how they took Mr. Preston round to the police station yesterday.
Oh.
Well, of course, we'd read about this murder in the papers, but well, even if they had mentioned him, we might never have known it was our Mr. Preston. And we only realized it when this young man said, you know that fellow Preston who comes here in the evening? They're after him for that Bromley murder. Oh, I saw at once. I've got to come.
Well, what have you come about?
Well, everything. Last Monday night.
What?
Well, you see, Mr. Preston's been coming to our place ever since the war. He just drops in of an evening on his way home.
I see.
Now, look, if you think there's anything in this, you're wrong, because there isn't. I'm not the sort that runs after other people's
husbands. I didn't suggest it, Miss
Dobson. No, but you're looking it. It's no good talking if you aren't going to listen. But why don't you bring Dave down? Let me tell him.
I've told you my husband's very tired and trying to rest. If you've anything to say, you can tell me.
All he ever had was a glass of sherry. Sometimes we'd sit round chatting in our private room.
Your private room?
Well, because he came before we opened, that's why.
Oh.
Sometimes we'd go into the saloon bar and have a game of darts. But he always left on the stroke of six to catch his train at Cannon Street.
You say he's done this for a long time.
Oh, yeah, getting on for 5 years now. I'm sure it does him good. Because he looks so tired and worried sometimes when he comes in. And he looked especially tired on Monday night. So I gave him a sandwich with his sherry. Then we went into the saloon bar for a game of darts. And we were laughing and joking. Then the strangest thing happened.
What?
Well, you see, there's a little van that brings our sandwiches. It comes about 5:30. Well, as he finished unloading, and just as it was starting off, there was a terrific backfire, you know, like a gun going off. Well, we all jumped because it startled us, and Mr. Preston did too. He turned his head quickly, and when he turned it back, he looked different.
How do you mean he looked different?
Well, you know when you turn your head quickly and rick your neck?
Yes.
Well, it was just as if Mr. Preston ricked his brain. He looked round as if he didn't know where he was, and he dropped the dart he had in his hand and he sat down. Well, of course, I mean, it scared us because we thought he was suddenly taken ill or something, but well, he kept saying he was quite all right in a queer sort of way, and then he got up and he said, you better go down to the shelter.
What shelter?
Well, I don't know. We've never had a shelter. Oh, we just used the cellar in the war. But it made us see what had happened. We knew he was an air raid warden in the war, and he suddenly thought it was still on. We talked to him, we said it was all right, but he just kind of mumbled and kept shaking his head.
Why didn't you telephone and tell me?
Well, how could we? He never told us where he lived, and oh, there are crowds of Prestons in the telephone book. Oh,
yes, yes, of course.
Well, then opening time came. Well, we couldn't have him sitting there in the bar looking so queer, so my brother Joe took him up to the spare bedroom and made him lie down. After a while, he dozed off. When the bar closed at 10 o'clock, we all went up, all three of us, and we sat round talking and wondering what we ought to do.
Well, you could have sent for a doctor.
We did think of that. We even thought of the police. You see, he didn't have anything to help us. He got no identity card or letters or anything, and he was sleeping so peacefully, we thought we'd better wait and see what happened when he woke up.
See.
But Joe and I looked in twice during the night, and he was still sound asleep. But he woke up quite easily when I took him a cup of tea in the morning. Still very funny, though. Still didn't seem to know where he lived or the place where he worked.
Oh, poor David.
Yeah. He washed and shaved himself with Joe's razor quite naturally, but his mind was still all mixed up in the war. He kept saying it was a quiet day with no alarms, and then he'd say, "Listen, here's one coming." You see, he was thinking of the fly bombs all the time.
Of course.
We gave him some breakfast and we made him stay quietly in his room, but Joe said if he wasn't any better by the evening, we'd have to tell the police.
Well, you knew that his bank was quite close. Why didn't you tell them?
We didn't know.
But surely...
Oh, of course we knew he worked in a bank, yes, but we didn't know where.
Yes, the doctor said something like that might be possible. What did he do the whole day?
Oh, he just sat about up there in the bedroom. Soon after 5, Joe said the only thing to do was to get him quietly round to the police station and tell them what had happened. So I gave him a sherry, you know, just to set him at ease. And we sat in the saloon bar. We all had a sherry. And suddenly, he began to change. He looked puzzled and restless, and then he sort of braced himself up and he said, "Aren't we going to finish our game of darts?" Now, you see, we were sitting round in the same place at the same time of evening, drinking sherry just like we did the night before.
Yes, I see.
Well, he stood up and he took one of the darts and he said, "Come on, what are we waiting for?" Oh, we didn't know quite what to do at first. And then St. Paul's began to strike 6 and he said, "Good Lord, 6 o'clock, it's time I went." Well, of course, well, we hated the idea of him going off like that alone. But he looked so ordinary and natural when he got his coat off the peg that we almost thought we were the queer one.
I just remembered something, Janet.
Hello, Dave.
Peggy. Why did you come here?
Well, I heard you were in trouble.
How did you know?
A young man who comes from down here said the police had you round yesterday.
Janet, Miss Dobson works with her brother and sister at a place where I drink a glass of sherry.
Of course, we read about this murder and...
I should have told you, Janet.
Oh, don't worry about that, David. Listen to what Miss Dobson has to tell you.
So once I've got to find out where you lived and come down and help you.
How can you help me?
Miss Dobson says you spent the whole of Monday night with them.
You stayed the whole night at the Feathers, Dave. Now, directly I tell them that, they can't go after you anymore.
But I left your place at 6 o'clock when St. Paul's was striking 6.
But that's it. You didn't. I mean, not on the same day as you came in. You didn't come out until the murder was all over.
I came into the Feathers just after 5 on Monday evening. I left at 6 o'clock. While the clock was striking, the police know that.
The police never came near our place. How can they know?
Because I told them. Everything I remember, just as it happened. Janet, I came down to tell you something. I'm sure it must have happened in the train coming home.
No, Dave.
Up in my room just now, I suddenly remembered quite clearly the people in the compartment when the train left Cannon
Look,
Street.
Look, Dave, I know what I'm talking about, and you've got the whole thing mixed up.
Later on, they were different. There was a soldier with a haversack and a boy with a parcel. It seemed to be a different train. Well, the doctor said that might have happened.
Oh.
I may have got out of the train before it got to Bromley.
How can you get off a train if you never got on it? Now, it doesn't matter what you say or think. Directly I've been and told the police, your worries are over.
Do the police know you've come here?
Not yet, but they jolly soon will.
You know what it'd mean if you went to them, how serious it'd be. You're not a child, Peggy. You realize the consequences.
Look, you don't understand what happened to you, and you're not trying to understand.
I want you to go home now.
Oh, Dave,
don't think I'm not grateful. You came to help me, and you have helped me. More than I can ever say. I shall always... Oh, that'll probably be the inspector.
I'll go.
I think I'd better go upstairs again.
Dave, surely you...
Peggy, do please go home.
Good evening, Mrs. Preston. Is your husband at home?
He's just gone upstairs. But I want you to hear what this young lady has to say.
Oh, I expect you're Miss Dobson.
That's right.
I heard you'd come down. I've been having a talk with your brother and sister at the Fellows this afternoon.
Oh, you have you?
Yes, Mr. Preston told us yesterday he called in at the Fellows that night, but, you know, he was so definite about leaving at 6 o'clock that it rather put us off the track at first. Well, Mrs. Preston, I'm sure it must be a relief to you.
Relief?
We never really thought your husband was involved.
What?
Well, the thing that had been puzzling us was the coincidence of someone trying to plant a robbery on a man the very night he's missing from home. Well, we've got a few things to clear up, but as far as Mr. Preston's concerned, there's nothing more to worry about. It's perfectly all right.
Oh, so it's perfectly all right, is it? You think you can walk in here smiling and everything's all right? Anybody think you were talking about a lost dog that's come home? Don't you realize you've made him ill?
Now, Miss Dobson.
When you knew he didn't do it, why couldn't you phone up from the Feathers and tell him? Oh, no, not you. You come in your own good time. All you fellows are good for is hanging around our place at night, seeing that nobody has a glass of beer after time. Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Preston.
That's all right, Miss Dobson. I agree.
Yes, well, I'll go now. I do hope you'll be all right. Do you want me for anything else, Inspector?
No, there's nothing, thank you.
Well, you know where to find me when you do.
I'll see you out. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, that's quite all right, really. Good night.
Good night. Inspector, for 2 days and two nights, my husband has believed himself to be a criminal lunatic. Don't you realize what that's done to him?
I do, Mrs. Preston. I only wish it could have been avoided.
You've nearly driven him mad. He wouldn't even listen to what Miss Dobson had to say. You've got to convince him. Please. Please, will you go up and tell him?
Of course, I'll do whatever I can. That's why I came. Oh, wait a moment. He's coming down.
Well, Inspector?
Well, Mr. Preston, I was just coming up to tell you there's nothing more for you to worry about.
What?
It was you who put us on the right track when you mentioned the little fellow who worked in the club kitchen and did odd jobs at the hospital.
But what?
You remember after your wife phoned the police, they phoned the hospital to ask if you were there.
Yes. But
it looks to me as if your club steward Robinson and this little chap had planned to get this money. Or maybe Monday night, maybe the next, I don't know. But when they hear the club treasurer is missing, well, it's a gift. They break open the safe and share the money, and Robinson goes round to Major Watson and tries to plant it on you. And after that, it looks like the old story of thieves falling out. Robinson gets a knock over the head, and the other chap takes the lot. Oh, they picked him up this evening over in Croydon. The money as well, all but a few pounds.
Thank goodness for that.
I'm afraid it's given you a lot of trouble and anxiety, Mr. Preston.
Anxiety?
But you know, it's one of these things that might happen to anybody. Oh, here's a handkerchief and a pair of gloves you left in the spare bedroom at the Fellows.
Thank you.
I think your solicitor was a bit worried about those. Well, I'll say good night.
I'll see you out.
No, don't bother. Good night, Mrs. Preston.
Good night, Inspector. Hello? Yes, this is Preston speaking. No, I don't think he can come just now. Later on, perhaps. Oh, well, wait just a moment. It's Major Watson. You don't want to speak to him, David, do you?
Yes, I'll speak to him. Good evening, Major. Yes, it's good news, I've just been told. Why, of course, Major. I knew you never thought that. Oh, yes, by all means, draw the horses. Why not? 8 o'clock tomorrow evening. I'll be there. Yes, I'll bring the books. Good night.
You didn't drink your tea, dear. It's cold. Well, I'll make some more.
Thank you, dear.
Tomorrow we'll put the tulips in. In the afternoon, we'll go for a walk in the park. Oh, David, it's so wonderful.
your home.
You've had a terrible time, Janet. I'm afraid I didn't help you very much. But I'm going to try. I'm going to try.
Oh, David. David.
In Home at Seven by R.C. Sheriff, the part of David Preston was played by Patrick Barr. Janet Preston by Isabel Dean. Dr. Sparling by James Thomason. Major Watson, Geoffrey Wincott. Mr. Petherbridge, Michael McLean. Inspector Hemingway, Simon Lack. And Peggy Dobson, Barbara Mitchell. The play was produced by Martin C. Webster.